The house has got to look amazing. It's got to be available to show. Buyers right now, especially in this market, they're picky. And when they're spending millions of dollars, you have to have everything on point.
Welcome to Your Wealth and Beyond, where Andrew Rafel, founder of Baintree Wealth Advisors, talks through all things financial understanding, personal growth, and more. Here we inspire you to turn your dreams into actions, because your financial journey should be just as exciting as your destination.
Welcome back to another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond, the podcast where we delve into the journeys of entrepreneurs, covering their stories of success, perseverance, and the valuable lessons learned along the way. I'm your host, Andrew Rafel, the CEO and founder of Baintree Wealth Advisors. And today we've got a remarkable guest joining us, Adrian Heyman, achieving the remarkable feat of being the top producing agent for 2018 to 21, and then I think even just last year in 23.
Fortunate. Yep.
Originally hailing from Australia, you're actually our second Aussie on the show. So
Very
looking
cool.
forward to chatting a little bit about that. But now you're a longtime resident here of PV, so we'll go through your story of how you ended up out here and your extensive market knowledge and deep community ties and adept negotiating skills have propelled Adrian to the pinnacle of the luxury real estate market here in Paradise Valley and Scottsdale. And outside of real estate, I know you've got some passions. We'll dig into Surf Rider, how that foundation is passionate for you, and then also your relationship with Lynn all these years and how that's helped you navigate success in both professionally and personally. So awesome to have you here on the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Listeners and viewers too. Adrian is just right below us here at the agency. So Baintree and agency were two floors. You guys are right below us here.
Yep.
So welcome to the show. So, you know, we got Australians, always interesting people. You know, I just love, I've never met an Aussie that
That's nice of you to say.
let's first, before we dig in, like, how did we wind up out here in this great state of Arizona?
Well, you're interesting. My wife, Lynn, was down in Australia on a vacation many years ago. And we happened to be out at a bar I did with a group of mates of mine. And he was like, look, I've met these two American girls. Come on over and introduce yourself. So as kind of fate would have it, my good mate ended up connecting with her best friend. I think often in life, timing, sometimes you meet the right person or persons, but the timing's not there. Lynn and I met. I actually she went back to the US, I should say, after that trip, and I came out for my buddy's wedding about a year and a half later. I was on my own. Lynn was on her own. We dated for a short time. She decided to move to Australia. We got married not long after. And, you know, the kind of rest is history. So it was kind of one of those whirlwind romances that didn't really start for some time. But, you know, we've had an amazing journey together. 25 years now.
Congratulations.
Thanks, mate.
That's awesome.
Appreciate it.
What part of Australia?
I'm from Sydney.
Okay.
Sydney, have you ever traveled down there?
Back in maybe 07, I was in Sydney for a little bit. I do remember Botanic Gardens with the bats hanging out over 20,000
right,
bats.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. Everyone always comments on the wildlife and all the amazing things, but it was a great place to grow up. You know, I'm a beach guy, ocean guy, and, you know, the city's surrounded by water. It's very similar to a San Francisco or a, you know, kind of Vancouver, two cities that kind of come to mind for people. But Sydney's got that great vibe of very cosmopolitan. You know, there's a lot of influence from Asia and Europe there as well, and it's just a great place to grow up. And it really was.
Yeah, it's got a little London feel to it. A clean city, though, has that, you know, little energy of New York. And
it does. It does on a smaller type version. Yeah, for sure.
So a guy that loves the water ends up out here in
I know what you're going to say.
I know we got some lakes, but
it's not quite the same. You know, it's funny. The desert has something that attracts you as well. For some people, it's the mountains. Some people it's the desert, other people it's the ocean. For anyone that spends a lot of time in the water or the ocean specifically knows that feeling, and it's very soul cleansing. I think for vacation purposes, you know, sometimes you just head to the ocean and it's that salt water and the smell of it and the feel of it on your skin. You know, yes, there's a lot of creatures, which everybody likes to remind me in Australia and say that must be a scary place, but growing up it was just kind of natural that you enjoyed the environment, the outdoors, and it just kind of becomes part of you. But there's a lot of cool outdoors here as well. So, but just different for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if Crocodile Dundee did a good thing for Australia. You know, it definitely brought you guys up, but it's one of those, I remember too, you know, with the kangaroos and the sheep. I mean, there's more kangaroo and sheep than there are people
in Australia. People don't realize that you've got a population of, you know, roughly 25 million in the entire country, where you've got over 300 here in the US. So everything's very spread out, but you tend to have those populous areas in big cities like Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, you know, so a lot of room to kind of spread out and do, but it's a great place. It is.
So Your Wealth and Beyond podcast, as we talk with entrepreneurs and, you know, in the real estate industry, I look at it as most real estate agents are, in a sense, entrepreneurs, right?
Right, running for sure. We are independent contractors running our own businesses, you bet, and very entrepreneurial, yes.
So back in Australia, were you in the real estate industry, or was it not until you
moved out here? I actually, out of school, started working in the health and fitness industry. I had my own personal training business for over 12 years. I would actually come to corporate companies and small companies, even like yourself, back in the day and go and take them for circuit training and fitness classes. So I was always motivated and always a motivator, I guess. I think that kind of translated well to later on. It wasn't until years later. And I was worked in the hospitality industry as well, always in that client service, customer service space. But it wasn't for years later until I actually moved to the US after I'd gotten married in 99 that I kind of branched more into that sales realm. We bought a house. We raised the kids in McCormick Ranch, which is not far. It's kind of in our backyard almost here where we are at the office. And I did a transaction. I thought the agent was okay, but having grown up and worked all those years in client service, I was kind of like amazed at what this young guy made on this transaction and kind of the average service, I guess, that I received. So it was at that time I thought, you know what, I'm going to go and get my license. I think I can make a go of this. And so I took that kind of savvy in those years of kind of entrepreneurship, working in that health and fitness industry, and kind of just applied that into the real estate realm. And from there, things just kind of went from good to great, just kept going.
And with real estate, right time, right place, this is, you know,
for sure,
starting in the early 2000s. So I assume you had some pretty good success up until about 06.
Listen, I was there in the thick of it, in the downturn. And it was a tough time through the good times early on, starting in, say, 2004. And then when that market tanked, it's hard to describe to people how it was. Every other home, I mean, you had to really, really turn yourself around in terms of every other house was owned by the bank, distressed properties. I mean, every other deal that you were doing. It was a crazy time to be in real estate. And it really was the kind of survival of the fittest. At that time, though, you learn a lot about yourself. You learn that markets aren't always going to go up. They're going to come down and cycle. And so I think it prepares you well for the next time and the next go around, which I really feel that has done that to where I am today. But I'm also cognizant of how things can change. I think we're in a great environment here. But back to your point, it really was a challenging time, both personally and professionally. You know, it just was 180 degrees from where we are today. And it's hard. People don't kind of see that at the time. And it's very hard when you're doing deals, when the herd is all running one way, to like switch gears and look at the opportunity and go the other way. But there's money to be made in both markets, depending whether you're investing or just, you know, looking to acquire a home or a residence. But challenging time, but a lot to be learnt out of those years for sure.
And what were some of the things that you did learn? Like, what did you do to enable yourself to continue growing the business in that tough time? You talked about the service that you didn't get when you moved out here and how you thought you could do it better. So what are some of those things in that challenging time that you learned that allowed you to stay on the path and not get out of the industry?
Look, I think from a personal standpoint, it was very challenging to keep the harmony and keep things all together at home.
Right.
And I'm fortunate to have an amazing wife who supported me the entire time, was always about, listen, let's stay strong at the top of the tree, and it doesn't matter where we're at financially. If we're on the same page, we can navigate through it, because there are a lot of couples and a lot of things that I was seeing out there where people people couldn't handle that at the time. So I think first and foremost, having that connection together and working through that just enabled us to stay strong and kind of just keep going. And I think you have to often reinvent yourself as well in those times where, I mean, you had Arizona, probably Florida and Nevada, I think were probably the three toughest places to be doing real estate at that time. I just found that we had a little bit of a breather back in Australia in 2011. In fact, after those tough years, a lot of the fun had gone out of real estate for me. And I'll get to it back to my other point here in a minute. But we actually in 2011 decided to give the kids a taste of, they were all still young then, like 12, 9 and 5.
Okay.
And we actually hopped on a plane back to Australia one way and wanted to give them a taste of life back there, not necessarily thinking that, you know, I kind of thought the American dream for me, if you like, was maybe not going to work out quite how I imagined. And so we moved back to Australia in 2011. And after weathering the storm during that GFC, it was almost like right at the beginning of 2012 was when that market almost bottomed out and took off. And after hanging in there, I kind of thought to myself, well, maybe that timing was just, maybe it's meant to be. But the experience we then gave our kids back in Australia, we were back there for 5.5 years, had an amazing time back there, giving them an opportunity to see what Australian life is like as opposed to being in the States. But then in December of 2016, we decided, everyone thought it was my wife that was homesick, but it was actually me that missed the energy and how the markets and things worked here in the US. So we came back to the US again and more or less started from scratch at the beginning of 2017. And that's when I really, after having those few years just to kind of reconnect, realize that there's time to decompress, learn a bit about yourself and what, you know, you really want. We came back and that's when I really started to launch into things. That was when I joined the agency in this luxury space and really took my career to another level.
And we'll touch on that, but taking to the kids 12, 9, and 5 when you moved them.
Yeah, they were.
Tough age for maybe the 12-year-old who had started building these friends, or was that something?
Almost the opposite. It's because they had friends. We'd travel back there quite regularly. And then you're at an age, weekend. It's kind of the youngest, my youngest daughter, I think, because you actually are traveling. The older kids seem to adapt and make friends quicker. But when you're little or at the age of 5 and 6, you make friends for a little while. The sports you're playing are different. So you go from basketball, baseball, maybe soccer here, even though we play a lot of soccer in Australia.
A little rugby out there.
You're playing a lot of rugby there. Yeah. You might be playing some cricket, but we actually were living right on the ocean and I helped run the junior lifeguard program down there. And it was something that I grew up with. So my kids from Scottsdale who were doing their sports here all of a sudden are in the ocean 5 days a week, learning how to body surf, ride waves, have a savvy and an ocean knowledge, you know, around nature. It was an amazing experience. And people often say, well, why would you give that up? Why would you come back? I think for people that have lived anywhere, maybe not just abroad, but it can be, you know, out of state. Home is always home. It's funny, when you're here in the States, I really miss things about Australia. When I'm having spent a lot of time here now, when I'm in Australia, there's a lot of things I miss about the US. Yeah. You do what's best for your family and the situation at the time. And even though the monetary things, had I stayed in 2011 through 2012, right when that market turned and I would have been there at the bottom of the, it's hard to predict the bottom. It's hard to predict the top, but I wouldn't take away anything in that experience of that 5.5 years that we had with the family and our kids. And we're getting to reconnect more with my family down in Australia too. You know, it's as we get older, your priorities shift a bit. You realize that time moves quick. You don't get as much time with your family and friends. And it just, even now, it's like this year, we're almost in March. You know what I mean? It just, it does. So
no, I think that's great for the kids to see the other side, that, you know, America and the US is great, but just to see how others live and, you know,
that is key.
The culture that Australia, you know, there's so many things that are resembling here, but there's so much different.
It really is.
That you can't teach in the books.
Yep. You're spot on.
So I think a lot of people don't realize that 2012 is when things finally turned around. People feel like it was 07 to 09. Yes, in the overall, let's say the stock market, that's when we hit the bottom. But here in Arizona, it really wasn't until that maybe May of 2012 when things just started, you know, coming back. So you're over in Australia. You're probably watching what's happening and decided to make the move back. You're like, this is where we need to be. So now we come back in 2017. And I mean, you probably have built a network, but you also maybe lost that network, right? So you're almost starting fresh again?
You're starting from scratch again. It's not like when you've been gone for 5.5 years, the clients and real estate deals are falling out of the sky. They weren't. And you're right. I always have done a good job in maintaining my network and staying in touch with not just friends, but clients as well. And because you never know what the future may hold. But I did. I had to come back. I had to do my real estate hours all again, really feeling like I'm at the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, right? And it's, again, at a certain age when you're reinventing yourself again, you have your moments of doubt, right? That's whereby, again, not to just, you know, heap praise on my wife, but she's always been there to support and push me and say, you've got it. It's all good, right? Stay focused on the things that really matter. But yeah, I mean, to come back and have to start from scratch was humbling, but in a lot of ways, we came back and I had a good mate of mine here who works in the commercial space, and he had his mother in the family home that they grew up in Paradise Valley. And he goes, look, she has to downsize now. She's getting older and we want to find her something a bit more turnkey. It's going to be really emotional. The house was built for them in 1972. I know a lot of real estate people, but he goes, I want you to handle it. And that one deal that I helped my mate with back then in 2017 in Paradise Valley kind of changed the trajectory for me. It was like all of a sudden, okay, I'm back in the luxury space against a lot of other good agents, a lot of other, you know, amazing people, but I can do this too.
Yeah. Gave you the confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And you joined the agency in 2017?
Yeah, so I did. So I was one of the first of myself and another couple here that I work with at the agency. We were their first agents. And real estate is, I always contradict myself a little bit with this statement because real estate is very much about the individual. It's about Adrian, or it's about Michelle or Julie, you know, or John, rather than whether he or she is with the agency or Sotheby's or, you know, another luxury brand out there. However, if you are a great agent and a great advisor and you back yourself or partner with the right luxury brand, it really does, in my opinion, set you up for success or a trajectory, especially in the luxury space. You could argue that on the buying of real estate, that again, it's more about that advisor or person that I like to work with. But when it comes to the sale and marketing of luxury property, the right agent combined with the right luxury brand is absolutely key.
A little deeper on that. So what would the agency in this case do when you mesh it together between what you're building on your brand and then the overall umbrella of the agency?
Look,
what does that mean?
Everything's got a different feel. I think there are good brands and great brands. What I liked about the agency that it was more in its infancy when they had launched. I mean, I believe like 11, because Mauricio Umansky, who's the founder of the agency, or he and Billy Rose, they started the agency right out of the GFC there back in 2011 also, looking for a different way to do things, feeling that they could add a level of, you know, excitement and bring a level of marketing to the table that other people do not. Like, for example, we have our own PR department under our real estate umbrella. So I looked at how edgy things were being done. I actually brought you the agency's magazine to have a look through later as well, so to leave you with. So, you know, just the way that we do things was a little edgy, a little more cutting edge than what I'm seeing some of the other brokerages out there. And I like going up against my competition, who might all be, again, a lot of them, there's a lot of great agents here. At the same time, I feel I have something up my sleeve that others do not by having that brand and what they bring to the table. They kind of were one of the very first that when you would see now, I mean, there's a lot of reality TV and things out there that make it sometimes seem a lot more glamorous than the industry really is. Having said that, it was things like hosting these events and big broker opens where you would, you know, almost create an event and a party at a luxury home, and the things that you would see and combining other luxury brands that are be on display with that luxury house that you're there promoting. So for me, it resonated and I felt that it would be a really good fit. And so far, it really has been.
And with the real estate industry, you look at the studies and 85-90% don't make it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Look, it's a tough business. I mean, people come in thinking that, you know, sometimes you see, and again, I think good and bad, right? Because I just spoke about the thing with the reality TV. Sometimes you see these shows and you see how much some of these agents are making and you think, wow, I could do that too. And there's a lot of, I will say now, there's a lot of young guys and girls that maybe necessarily don't have the experience, but have the connections. And that's part of it in life too, right? Not what you know, who you know. But I think the challenges of real estate come back to that it takes a long while to build up that market knowledge and really understand and have that something that other agents do not. Doesn't come overnight. I think you really have to know your market inside out. It helps if you live in that neighborhood or that area where you're selling luxury property. It's not imperative, but I think it gives you an upper hand against other agents.
I think in even in our industry, in the financial services industry, you can't fake it, right? People know that you have to care about their best interests. It's not about, yeah, obviously everything comes down to closing a deal, we're making money, but the passion that we see the successful luxury advisors like yourself, they care about their client. They know the ins and outs. They have the connections, the relationships, and the client feels that this individual, this team, I trust that they're putting my interest first.
You have to detach from that outcomes, definitely the monetary. You have to look at what is best for them. Sometimes you can be looking at properties for months and client decides that, no, you know what? There's been life circumstances, something changes. You have to be like, no worries. When the time's right, we'll connect again. Same with on the sale of the house. I think you actually become, been saying it a lot to friends and colleagues in the business lately, you know, you're more a therapist and a counselor at times than you are a salesperson because you have to detach from that monetary outcome and do what's best for the client. And I think if you adhere to that, I think just the rewards or the results themselves will come in time anyway. So that's how I try to approach every deal, really listening to their needs and wants. And sometimes too, it might be, okay, I know what you want to do now with this property. What's your next move? Sometimes people know and sometimes they don't. So, okay, it might be, well, before we market and get your home ready to sell here, let me understand what your future moves are, much like you would do with your clients. So what are you wanting to do in that future so that we can actually have a game plan and a roadmap there to help you get to where you want.
And with regards to somebody selling their house and maybe wanting to upsize or downsize, I assume one of the values you bring is to help them look at that house. And this is maybe where the relationship with Lynn comes into play too, of help in a sense staging that home to make it where it becomes that vision, that dream of the buyer, the future buyer is going to come in there and be like, this is it. This is home.
Yeah, it's key. I'm so fortunate to have her, you know, on the team or as part of the team because she sees things and has a vision that sometimes I do not. And it might be just looking at a room or maybe moving something there. Or she has amazing vision for that. And it is key to sort of to set that tone because right now there are four things I feel that you have to have, especially in this current market. The house has got to look amazing. It's got to be available to show. I've got to be able to market it correctly, obviously, but it's got to be priced right. If you can have those four things, but the key right now is to have that house showing. Buyers right now, and especially in this market, they're picky. And when they're spending millions of dollars, you have to have everything on point and part of that. And you're seeing it with a lot of the top luxury agents. They all have, the top ones all have either interior designer, interior decorator, stager, or a combination of all three to help them bring that house. And so I'm really fortunate to have Lynn to work with on that.
Now, with your experience, and whether it's luxury or not, what are the mistakes that you see homeowners who are selling or the agents, advisors that are working with them, what are some of the top mistakes that people make to not get the top value for a property?
It goes back to a little bit just what we were talking about. If you think in this, especially in this current environment that you can, and it's hard, right? Because it's such an emotional thing with your primary residence, your personal home. And people have thoughts on what to them may be amazing or look great. But we often say is how you live and how you present your house for sale are two completely different things. So you actually have to look to make some changes. It might be painting the home interior, exterior. It could be landscape. It might be staging, taking away some of their own personal things and putting in things that actually we know are going to appeal more to buyers. And that's part of the service offering that we put out there. I think that is key. And it's also right now, it's very important on pricing. With the shift in the market a little bit here of late, it's really key to understand pricing and to know where you need to be on that. That and the presentation of the house are, I think, the two most important things. And they're often the mistakes that you see, you know, sellers making. And it's hard. You know, we are there to advise. Ultimately, yeah. We have to do what they want. But if you really want the success and the results, you've got to adhere to those two things.
And there's so much emotion that's involved in
there is.
What they saw the neighbor down the street sell it for, and over the last 5-6 years with the Zillows and the Redfin, it's changed the dynamic it even has. On the luxury end market. Yep. So it's getting them back to that therapist, get them in that mindset that if we really want to sell, this is what we need to do and to ensure. And I assume you probably walked away from some deals where you're like, listen, this is what it's worth. We can't go here because you're going to be mad at me in 3 months when right. We don't get one single offer.
You're right. Look, it's very much, I like to go into interviews and listing appointments with that thought of like, you're interviewing them too, because you often have to, and I often say it to clients, look, we're going to sometimes have to have some of these hard conversations along the way. And it's not easy when it comes down to monetary things where you're like, you do have to have some hard conversations. I want us to be on the same page and be happy when that time comes around. I am really authentic. I try to always bring a good energy to the table as well, because I think if you can do that with a genuineness and a care for the client, and you have to. And again, I think when you're dealing, especially even with high net worth individuals as well, there's a different way of looking at things and they look at things differently. So I think if they really appreciate you being forthright and giving them, you know, that genuineness up front, because it is an interview between both of you. I'll often say, listen, you know, I want to come away from today. Not only do I really want to list your home and earn your business, but, you know, I want you to feel good about working with me too, because if you're not going to be, then maybe we're not the right fit. And I think if you approach listing appointments, you know, negotiations that way, I think it works in your favor. It really does.
Now, the reality world, you know, $1 million listing, a lot of those shows that are out there, a lot of it's fluff in theory, mm-hmm. right? When somebody watches that, they see, how real is that?
Look, there are aspects that there definitely are. I mean, it's the landscape, as I mentioned before, is changing in that you are seeing a lot of young guys and girls out there who happen to be connected, who have those relationships with people with a lot of money. We are not LA or New York, we're our own market here, and it is very different. Having said that, there are opportunities and there are clients that see that. And I think you can, again, take some of these great things from the reality TV. For example, you know, we've done broker open events where we've had the local Mercedes dealership or Ferrari dealership. And again, you're combining these things, these luxury brands with our luxury brand to highlight something, and it definitely creates a buzz. Mm-hmm. It does. It's really elevating that luxury feel and that experience. And that can go from catering to the entertainment that you put. I mean, we're seeing some fun things. So I think on the right property, it can really behoove you. At the end of the day, you've got to come back to these same things that you and I were just talking about. And that is really knowing how to be savvy in marketing a property, really understanding the numbers and under-promising and over-delivering at the end of the day. The reality TV definitely plays its role in enhancing what we're doing. And I'll tell you what it's done. It's helped us all elevate our game, you know, from the whole marketing plan and strategy of marketing a luxury home. It's changed now. Like, you've got to be doing these things at a level that is here. And if you're not, your competition will be. And I think this is one of those markets, especially some of the sales we're seeing in Paradise Valley, Silverleaf and North Scottsdale. We just weren't seeing 20-something million dollar sales here before. But now, if you're marketing something like that with the amount of money that you can potentially make, then you better bring an experience that's going to kind of transcend the home itself.
And the growth trajectory that we're on here in PV and in Scottsdale in general since COVID has been incredible. I think you're seeing a lot of people realizing, whether they came out here for a trip, for spring training, for golf, they had a buddy that moved out here during COVID. They come out here and this is actually a pretty good place to live. Taxes are low,
right.
Property taxes low. I've got an easy living, safe environment,
right?
Nature. And it's like, why would I live in California? Yeah. And then I come here. So we're seeing this trajectory here where the average home sale in PV is what, like $5 million?
It really is. I mean, now at a minimum for a good lot, just a flat buildable 1 acre lot, you're looking at $2.5 million. I mean, are there exceptions to lower than that? Yes. But there are some transacting a lot higher than that too.
And who, you know, thinking back when you moved back here in 2017, that you would think that lots are selling for $2 million. You would have laughed at it.
My mate's mother's house there in PV, we did. It was a great lot. We listed that at $975,000. Sold it for, I think, $972,000.
Somebody made a killing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So it's all timing. It really is. And there's still a big appetite out there for it right now. If people, there are a lot of buyers, investors looking for that opportunity for the same things you and I just spoke about.
Now, what about the industry shift or this momentum about commissions, right? And I know it's luxury versus the regular. There's a lot of different service and value that you bring.
Yep.
But you being in this industry, being at the pinnacle, talk to the listener about that. What's the fear you have? Where do you see the industry going? Does it have legs to it? And how's that going to affect how you're going to run your business?
You know, I've been saying for years that just with technology now, whether it's Zillow or Redfin, that I can go on and see as a buyer or a seller for that matter, a lot of information that I just simply could not years ago. And that while we want to say that our value or our value add and what we earn is definitely worth it and the money there, I've always said too, it's, I think for a lot of people out there, the average person, they look and think that's a lot of money to make on a real estate transaction. Now, you can look at it the opposite way and say, well, okay, if that person through his or her marketing and what he did and how they presented my property helped me achieve that number or figure, even maybe beyond what I thought I was going to get, then they are worth it. I do see the downward pressure on it because the 6%, we've seen a lot of it where it's coming down to 5 now, and there'll always be the time where people want it. It's a negotiable thing, and I think people have to remember that. Commissions are negotiable. These lawsuits are a big deal. And it's already in the short term changing the way that we look at things. An example being now that a lot of selling agents out there are going to potentially be listing it with a very small or no commission, and then the buyer's agent having to then negotiate with their buyer client what their fee may be. And even though there's been a push or a chorus behind singing the praises of it in some from a very small section in our luxury community, most of the luxury agents, we all feel that the service and the offering that we provide, that we're worth what we do. An interesting thing to share is that in Australia, the way they do real estate is that they actually only, for the most part, have the one agent system, and buyers go direct to that listing or selling agent. It's only though in recent years that system over there has started to change. And having worked back there briefly before I did come back here in 2017, I much preferred the US way of doing business. I think for arguably the largest financial transaction or monetary transaction you make in your life, it's nice to have your own representation. In Australia, I found it definitely a bit more skewed towards the seller because buyers would be going direct. And then you've got 5, 6 people speaking with that same agent. So I like our system here. It will be interesting to see how things unfold in the future. But I think we're going to see a downward push a bit on commissions. Maybe we're not going to see that 6% as the norm anymore. Maybe it is 5 or maybe it's 4.5 and we work through that. But I feel that as a whole, as a group, the luxury agents and advisors that I work with a lot, we're worth what we do, and you do work hard. It's a very challenging, emotionally challenging thing at time, and you've got a lot of responsibility there. But I will be interested to see how things pan out in the future.
The economics too of it is that you, if you're marketing the property,
yep,
you're spending your money on potential property. You're coordinating, bringing in the Mercedes dealership, bringing in the champagne, bringing in the high end flyers, and so forth, right?
Yep.
And so I'm sure there's been a lot of times where you've spent marketing dollars for sale of said property, and then we don't sell it.
Unfortunately, it happens, right? You're right.
Yeah.
And it does. And so that's part of it. I think people too, by the time, when you look at that commission amount, nearly every brokerage at some, in some way, shape or form has a split with the company that they're with. And it can be anything from 5% to 20% and or more. And, you know, then you're taking care of Uncle Sam. Then you're taking care of those marketing expenses. By the time it whittles down, it is nothing like what that number that you see there, right?
And you hit on a good point there. A lot of the real estate agents, like commercial brokers, a lot of times they come into a little bit of a foul of the tax side of things. They forget, or they're, you know, maybe younger in the industry, they get this big paycheck and they don't realize that X, Y, and Z has to be withheld by themselves to pay the taxes. And then all of a sudden, Uncle Sam comes a year later and they're like, oh no, I spent that money, or I put that into a property and I don't have that. So that's something that I'm sure as you get the new agents coming through, one of the things you probably preach to them is, you know, get your house in order, including making sure you're paying your taxes or saving for retirement and things of that nature.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. So the as we look at this industry, you know, not trying to, you know, time the markets and things of that nature, do you still see over the next 5 years with the influx of growth that Arizona has, that Phoenix has, that Scottsdale, that PV has, do you still see that this market is going to at least trend on that upward positive side?
I do as of right now. Because again, having been here before and seeing the volatility, or not seeing anything like that right now, there always could be some unforeseen global event or financial event that changes everything on a dime. But right now, to your point, I see Arizona is on the radar for a lot of people. Yeah. You know, there was just another article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday just about that. Paradise Valley, and there's been a slew of them this week, right? Not just Paradise Valley, but Arizona in general. A lot of people from California. We spoke before about the weather, certain parts of the world, I think. And we've kind of got that layout here, much like an LA, in terms of you're seeing these communities and the spread in the Southeast Valley, out on the west side as well. There's a lot of room here and a lot of development going on, and a lot of development slated, not just in residential, but commercial, retail, industrial. So I think that we're going to continue to see Arizona, especially as we keep dealing with just some of these just natural weather events. Unfortunately for certain people in certain parts of the country, we're kind of pretty immune to it for the most part here. So I think Arizona, in my opinion, will remain a go-to destination and place to live.
Yeah, as long as people know it's going to be hot here in the summer.
Well, I do like to get that across to people because we are spoiled, but the summers are long and hot here. Yeah. And if you've lived here for long enough, you know that, right?
I've been here 23 years. The monsoons, it seems like they ebb and flow, and we don't some years get them at all. And
last year was a hot one, right?
That's because we had a great spring, so it happens.
Yes.
So let's talk a little work-life balance. You had came from the more of the health space. Mm-hmm. You obviously take good care of yourself. So what are you doing to keep yourself, the stressful job that you have, keeping together the emotions of your team and the clients and the buyers and the sellers and all the things that you can't control? So what do you do on a daily basis to try to control your mindset?
Oh, look, I'm a big workout guy, so it's not just the gym, although I am there 4 or 5 days a week, but I like to cross train. It's a mixture of the cardiovascular, the weight training. I love yoga too, the heated yoga. I'm dealing with a couple of injuries from overdoing things. It gets tougher as you get older, you know what I mean? Yeah. It does a bit, but I like to swim too, you know, a bit of hiking. I like to do it all. I mean, I think it definitely is. I think for most of us, how we're wired, you know, it seems to be a lot of that way in real estate, but you probably find the same thing for you too. It's as much the physical that you need as that mental release as well. I find you've got to get that session in early in the morning, at least for me. And then I feel like the rest of the day is on the right trajectory. You know, I think it keeps my energy levels up and feeling good. And it's been such a part of my routine for so many years that I can't imagine not doing anything. On the days where you do miss or a day or two, that's when, you know, Lynn looks at me and she knows I'm getting one of those moods, and it's like, go and have your session. Yeah. And, you know, so, yeah, but I think it's integral for what we do. And I'm really strict about it, but I like to mix it up. Obviously, warms up here a bit more, you try and make the most when this weather's nice about being outside, whether it's bike riding. You know, I've got one of those little hybrids, so it's not a mountain bike or a road bike, but, you know, it's still fast and nice, so you get a good session on that. But, yeah, I like to mix it up and do cross-train and do a bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, this town definitely accentuates that. It makes it easier to work out and eat better and wake up early, go to bed early, get some hiking, drive 2 hours and drop 20 degrees in temperature during the summertime. So a lot of great benefits that is, I think, when people come here and they realize that, that helps catapult this growth. So surf ride?
Look, yes. Look, if I could prioritize the workouts, but again, not having the ocean here, but I definitely have been fortunate enough. When you grow up around it, I'm definitely a waterman in the sense that being able to surf, I also had back in Australia for years, which I was only just looking at it the other day, getting another one, but like a racing ski. They're almost like an outrigger, just as wide, you know, the width of your butt, but about 18 feet long. And it's an amazing workout, like ski paddling. A good mate of mine, I'd never done too much of it, but he introduced me to stand-up paddle boarding. So we've had a couple sessions out of the lake as well. So anything around the water, the ocean, for me is kind of my priority, but it's just I try to get over there as much as I can. That's always been my favorite thing to do, is be in the water. How about yourself?
For me, road biking is a big piece of what I do. Yoga, just got back into it the last 6 months. I was into it years ago. So
good.
The hot yoga and then, you know, sauna, cold plunge has been something I've been doing since 19, and hiking, you know, lifting a little bit, but trying to mix it up too.
Sure.
And just stay active. When we think about, as we kind of wind down today, you think about, you've had trials, tribulations, success, failures. Does anything resonate in from a mentor of advice, whether it's from a family member, whether it's from somebody in the industry, somebody out of the industry, but what has stayed with you of guidance from somebody who you looked up to, who helped you set yourself apart and to be on this path for success?
You know, my dad shared a saying with me years and years ago that a winner never quits and a quitter never wins. And that always stuck with me. I'm fortunate to have amazing parents or been raised by amazing parents, and not necessarily in that were business savvy, but were the best mum and dad I could ask for. And we try and do the same thing with our kids. We're not perfect, but we're always trying to be better. But I've tried to surround myself around people or read or see those that have, it might have been some Aussie icons at the time growing up or other successful business people, whether, and it might be in the real estate space as well. But I believe that you have to stay at it, and there's going to be ebbs and flows. And real estate is one of those industries that really is the peaks and valleys. It's hard sometimes mentally and emotionally to navigate that, but you just have to keep your head down and keep going. There's always someone in life that's selling more, but there's always someone that's selling less, or someone that's doing better or doing what. You just got to stay on your own path, keep your head down, keep surrounding yourself around other good people. I like being around people with positive energy that radiate, right? You know what I mean? You're attracting that same like, right? And it's hard, but the things that you spoke about, whether it's that's where the exercise plays into it and the meditation maybe of a morning as well and being in that space. But I think just really keeping your mindset, but being grounded and humble too. You know, I think that's the other key thing with it.
Yeah, and success is, you know, a lot of people will see the success that you have or success that other entrepreneurs have, and they think, well, that looks great, but they didn't realize the blood, sweat, and tears that you went through to get to that point and that you still go through on a daily basis. It's not all shiny. It's the little work, the, as you said, grinding it out every day and focusing on the things you can control, the people that you have the relationships with. The tough part of your industry is that you could be building this great business, these great relationships, this great client service, and then because interest rates went up 100% in a period of time we've never seen, boom, it just catapults sometimes the growth trajectory. And then we got to look and say, okay, well, this too shall pass. And you just keep plugging away.
It's so spot on what you said. I mean, you have to keep going back to, again, that's whereby having the great partner at home, you've got to just, sometimes you have to, I mean, I find a lot that we're reinventing ourselves. You know, there are those, and it might, sometimes it could be on a week to week basis of if something's not working. I think it's just all a matter of, like, you know, shifting gears a little bit. If something's not kind of going your way right now, then maybe I ought to look at something else. But, you know, there's always someone doing it tougher. And I try to focus on that when I feel, if I'm having a day where I feel average, it doesn't take you long to kind of realize that someone else is doing it. A lot of people out there doing a lot tougher.
So are we going to see you on the top of the leaderboard again this year in 2024?
I hope so, mate. Yes. Yeah. I'll make prediction. No, well, you've put it on me now, but I hope so. I think if you just keep doing the things that you know you need to do, the rest kind of takes care of itself, or you hope it does.
Well, we went through a lot today. You know, listeners, viewers, the success, it doesn't come easy. It's finding the right passion that you can excel in, but then also having the right foundation at home. And sometimes that is the luck of the draw, you know, having your partner that is the right partner that can help you weather the storm. So ultimately, as we look at success and we look at expectations of where you want to be, you know, it's looking out to put you in the best position possible for you and your family. But it's also in any business, any service business, it's always being there for your client and building the right client experience. And number one, doing and following through on what you say you're going to do, actually do it. So tremendous success that you've had. And we look forward to seeing what the next 5 years holds for you. And this has been great. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it. I'm wishing you continued success too, mate, for you and the company and business. It was a pleasure. And most importantly, I'm hoping those Browns next year, I'm thinking it might be your year.
Yeah, that's 25. What they say. This is going to be
the
year.
I hope so.
But until then, we'll keep the misery happening. You know, it's one of those things. I don't know if they ever do win, what I'm going to feel like. But ultimately, at some point, they've got to win.
They will. I'm pulling for you.
Well, this has been great. Appreciate the time.
You too.
All the show notes from today's episode will be below the video, below the podcast as well. We appreciate all of you. Stay tuned for a brand new episode of Your Wealth and Beyond later this month. Happy planning, everybody.
Thank you for joining me for today's episode of Your Wealth and Beyond. To get access to all the resources mentioned during today's podcast, please visit Baintree.com/podcast. And be sure to tune in later this month for another episode of Your Wealth and Beyond.
Investment advice is offered through Baintree Wealth Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuity products are offered separately through Baintree Planning Group, LLC. Baintree is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during this show shall constitute legal or tax advice. You should talk to a qualified professional before making any decisions about your personal situation.